Views on News with Mark Latham.
Good afternoon, Mark Latham. How are you?
G'day, Brent. Really good, thanks. It's great to be with you.
Likewise. I've got a couple of questions I want to ask you before we get stuck into our stories. I had Dennis send me an email and he said, can you ask Mark Latham a couple of questions? And I said, oh, well, I'll ask him. I don't know. He doesn't have to answer. Question number one is, what progress has Pauline Hanson managed to achieve in her mission to put fairness back into family law? It has always been anti-male and nothing has changed irrespective of what they say.
Well, it's a question without notice, and I'm happy to report that Senator Hanson has been working with the federal Attorney General Christian Porter to get a inquiry. I know there's a lot of inquiries in politics, but the objective of this one is to put sanity and balance back into the family law system. And I know it's a priority for Pauline that, you know, in the Senate and all the negotiations, she certainly wants the government to do positive things in family law in return for One Nation support on other matters. And I think, you know, I looked at this when I was a federal member of parliament, and obviously people talk about it a lot. I think the main thing in family law is to start with a presumption of 50-50. 50-50 child access, 50-50 asset distribution, 50-50 sort of child support arrangements. And then if these things do go to court, you know, you want them conciliated in the first instance, but things where it's so bitter, it's so divisive, it does go to court, the only time that they would deviate from the 50-50 rule in terms of parental rights is if there's an overwhelming necessity, a reason that the court can't avoid. For instance, say one of the parents is a drug addict or convictions against them. So at the moment, unfortunately, in family law, the presumptions are against, you know, the onus of proof and reality is against the men. That's how it's been working. I think if the Democrats are serious about gender equality, well, you've got to look at family law and say everyone should be 50-50, and only in the most extreme circumstances where it's unavoidable would a father be denied access to his children or have a financial burden that's out of step with what the woman pays.
All right. The other one was in reference to Pauline and her immigration debate. She was having a second crack at trying to get Australians a plebiscite, or a referendum, I suppose, at the 2022 elections, and that, as we know now, was defeated. Is she going to persist with this?
Well, I hope so, because everything you do on immigration has got to be about giving people a bigger say. We know that the Big Australia immigration's a disaster for congestion in our cities. It's flooded the labour market and held down wages. And I think the average Australian, whether on those environmental or economic grounds, would say, let's bring the program back to, you know, the average of the 20th century when it was about 70,000 a year rather than the 200,000 we've got right now. And it's topical because earlier this week the Grattan Institute had a report saying that the low-wage migrant exploitation, which is sort of at the core of our immigration program, it's the thing holding down wages in Australia. Now, a lot of debate about why so many people not had a decent wage increase in the last 5 years. Well, the size of the immigration program is right at the core of that. Now, some people say, oh, you can't say that because that's racist to talk about immigration numbers. Well, that in itself is baloney. You really do have to confront this issue, and Australia's immigration policy has to be framed for the benefit of the people who live here right now rather than thinking we owe anything to the rest of the world by having to have massive numbers of permanent migrants or refugee intake.
Okay, thank you for that. Gladys Berejiklian, she's delayed the vote to decriminalise abortion in New South Wales. This was the Independent MP, Alex Greenwich. She introduced, or was trying to introduce, the bill this week. There's an unprecedented, 15 co-sponsors from all sides of politics, but now it's going to be debated next week.
Well, it's still a very short time frame. Alex Greenwich is giving this a second reading in the lower house today, possibly as we speak, and to then rush it through in 1 week in the parliament defies common sense. I mean, the bill's got plenty of holes in it. I'll just give you two examples. One is that the bill allows for late-term abortion. Effectively, you only need one doctor to tick it off, presumably the doctor doing the procedure, and babies can be aborted right up to the point of birth, you know, a couple of days before birth. Now, you don't have to be a Christian MP or a religious MP to think that's out of step. They've gone down an extreme path with this bill. Instead of, say, going down the path of Northern Territory, which says that after 14 weeks, the abortion is legalized, decriminalized, and after 24 weeks, you need medical approval. But after 24 weeks of pregnancy, abortions are still illegal in the Northern Territory. Now, that, to me, I would have thought would be a moderate, sensible, consensus-type position that most people in the Parliament could live with. But to go through to 8.5 month abortions ticked off by one doctor who clearly will have a financial interest in doing the procedure, this is not the way to get proper process or the substance of the bill right. So that's a major problem. The other problem is that Christian and Islamic doctors who don't want to do the procedure are going to be forced to refer the patient on to another doctor who will do the procedure. Now, we all talk about religious freedom, and the Commonwealth's putting forward a bill. I've given notice of a religious freedom bill in New South Wales. Wouldn't it be wise to hold off to see what happens on the religious freedom front before you start compelling doctors to do something that's against their moral code, against their religion? And I think we move closer to a police state when you're forcing people to do something that they regard as morally wrong. So there's two big reasons why this bill should never have been rushed through. It was sort of like an ambush on Sunday. People in the government, the coalition, didn't know their own health minister was part of this until he bobbed up at a press conference next to Alex Greenwich on Sunday. So Gladys Berejiklian here is sort of hiding behind this Greenwich guy, and if she had any brains and any common sense in this and didn't want to bitterly split her government, and you've got two ministers out today complaining about the process, she'd pull back and say, look, can we have a look at the Northern Territory model as a consensus position? Can we refer this to an upper house committee and have a good, sensible look at the interface with religious freedom issues? Otherwise, Brent, I can guarantee you this is going to embitter major parts of the state parliament for years to come. The feeling on this is red hot. Right. Red hot. And Berejiklian here, it's a failing of leadership to try and hide behind other people. And even if that was leadership, it doesn't work. And it's certainly not working in this instance.
Okay, 22,000 workers today, including paramedics, security and administration staff, were on strike. It was up for 4 hours. That's said the Health Services Union. The unions, of course, at loggerheads with the Health Ministry over calls for increased security and staff safety after a series of violent assaults on healthcare workers. Now, the government says it's committed to addressing security issues and has criticised the union for reneging on an earlier agreement to call off the strikes, but the strikes have gone ahead. I just think it's so sad we live in a world where we've got to have full-time security guards in emergency rooms of hospitals.
Well, it's become a reality. It unfortunately, has. The number of vicious attacks on hospital staff has escalated, and we just can't have clerical staff, cleaners, nurses, doctors being attacked by people. We do need these marshals in the hospital system. The union, I think quite accurately, is calling for 250 security guards in our hospital. So if someone goes berserk physically against staff, they can be restrained and they can be removed from the hospital premises and then presumably handed over to the police. So we just can't have a system where those working in the hospitals are living in fear of their physical safety. But I'd take it a step further and look at the escalation in the number of vicious physical attacks on our police, our AMBOs, our fireys. And I think it's overdue, and my One Nation colleague in State Parliament, Rod Roberts, is working on this, a private member's bill, to have mandatory sentencing of people who are convicted of physical attacks on any of our emergency and safety workers.
The sooner they
from hospitals to the police, the magistrates basically tap these characters on the wrist and send them on their way.
They do.
They should spend time in jail. Thumping a policeman or an AMBO or a fiery or a health worker, you should spend time in jail. No excuses. We need these people. They're vital for the functioning and the safety and the health of our society, and it's time to respect them and lock up these animals who are doing the attack.
The sooner that mandatory sentencing for those crimes is introduced, the better.
Yeah, no, well, that's what Rod Roberts, a former policeman, number two on my ticket, thankfully he was elected, he's working on that, and hopefully the government will see the sense of passing it through, because not only do we need the security guards, we need tougher laws right across the emergency services sector, So anyone attacking these valuable workers spends some time in jail.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. Look, the first news poll was out on Monday, and it shows that Scott Morrison has cemented his place as Australia's preferred Prime Minister. According to news poll, two-party preferred, 53-47. But it suggests that Anthony Albanese has a long way to get a long way to go to get the ALP back into a winning position. And I suppose there are question marks also over his leadership as a result of this poll.
Well, it's been a funny situation. Labor lost the unlosable election. The first poll since the May election shows Labor's still on 33% primary vote, and Albanese's disapproved by 36% of the population. Now, what's he done to earn the disapproval of 36% of the people? It's sort of like the voters are saying, why take an instant dislike to Anthony Albanese? Because it saves your time. And they've really given this bloke a hammering. So, Brent, have you found it strange, Labor's reaction to the election loss? Should they have just come out and the new leader said, we lost for these reasons, one, two, three, we got it wrong, we're abolishing all our policies that made this mistake, we're well out of step with the Australian mainstream, and we're going to start again? Wouldn't that be the logical response instead of denial, blaming Murdoch, having an inquiry? I mean, isn't it obvious that Albanese should have just owned up to the errors, cleaned the slate and started again?
It is, but sometimes the obvious isn't the obvious.
Well, it's been a very strange reaction from a party. They almost look paralysed, that they haven't quite comprehended they lost when they really were up against the rabble. The whole Abbott, Turnbull, Morrison thing should have guaranteed them government, and they lost because their policies were way out of step with what the Australian people expect these days, especially the high taxes and the determination to kill off coal jobs in working-class communities. So, if Albanese doesn't understand that, maybe that's why people have got this high disapproval against him in his first news poll. And, you know, as you become opposition leader and you complain about the government and you're seen as negative, those disapproval numbers only get worse. And I think Albanese, unless he can turn this around quickly, he's on a pathway to being very, very unpopular and Labor being out of office for some time to come.
George Columbaris is, rarely lost for words. Last night on his ABC interview, he wasn't lost for words, but I've got a little bit here. I'll play it, Mark.
You're running a million miles an hour, being creative, you know, being someone that can, you know, inspire the team with the food that you're cooking, with the way we're serving, all that stuff, and you assume that in the back end, things are happening at the same speed, but they weren't. But now we have a great audit system, incredible people back of house that can make sure this never happens again. We're not closing our restaurants. We're here. And, you know, it's my job as their leader to keep pushing forward and keep speaking this message. Not shying away from the mistake we made, but also acknowledging that we fixed it. And, you know, I love these people.
He said he was very sorry, I don't know how many times during that interview, and at one stage obviously was upset. I suppose he said there, Mark, that, you know, you assume the back rooms are doing the right thing. Well, we know what the word assume means, doesn't it? It makes an ass out of you and me, absolutely, sometimes.
As a holdie bit of goodie, always true.
Yeah.
I think the big question here is, has he paid back the $8 million in wages shortfall, the money that people were denied?
I got the impression from last night's interview was, and stuff that I've read, is that he has paid all that money back, yes. That was
okay.
The impression.
Well, that's a positive step, and I certainly hope for the sake of the people working in these restaurants they don't close, and perhaps the public, you know, need to forgive the dreadful, dreadful thing that's happened for the sake of the workers so they're not thrown on the welfare scrap heap. But, I mean, you'd have to say there's a lesson here for anyone. No matter your profile, and George Columbaris and all these MasterChef celebrity chefs, you know, back in the day, to be a cook at the Chinese wasn't all that glamorous, but now they're celebrities and they're on tax money. Good luck to them. But, you know, no matter how high you rise in society, whether it's media, politics or business, you've really got to attend to the fundamentals. And it's no good saying that he was racing at a fast pace in his life and the back office didn't do the same. Your first responsibility, whether, Brent, you're a radio announcer like you're a politician like me, or a business owner like Columbaris, your first responsibility is to the people who work for you. You know, that's so basic. And this bloke didn't get it right. he's fessing up to the mistake now, but there's a lesson there for anyone in society. You can rise high, but don't forget the people you started with and who support you at the lower levels of your enterprise. And he's got this dreadfully wrong. I'm glad to hear he's repaid the money, and perhaps all of us can forgive him on that basis.
And as they say, go and have a meal at one of his restaurants. I've got to go to the news.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it to help him, but I'd do it to help the
staff.
Absolutely, yeah. It's not their fault. And
I agree.
At least they've got their money back that was rightfully theirs. And hopefully it's a powerful lesson right through the hospitality industry that this should never happen again.
Mark Latham, thank you as always for joining us. We look forward to joining you next Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks, Brent. Good
Thanks,
on you.
Mark. Bye-bye. Mark Latham.